This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Cedarside.com, your all-natural, organic solution to pest control problems, protecting people, pets, and premises. Cedarside.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is yet another in our series of clinical focus podcasts, and the subject is urinary problems. It will focus on urinary tract infections in both men and women. We will talk a little bit about urinary frequency, but we will reserve our discussion about urinary frequency in men for a discussion of prostate problems when we discuss prostatic enlargement. So we're mostly going to talk about urinary tract infections or interstitial cystitis or urinary frequency. So let's frame the subject by starting off by saying that this is a big problem. We tend to think of it as a minor inconvenience, just a matter of going to the doctor and getting an antibiotic. But with concerns being raised about frequent antibiotic use, certainly we want to look at alternatives to antibiotics. Also, urinary tract infections sometimes are very difficult to treat, become resistant to antibiotics. They can be responsible for very severe symptoms. If a urinary tract infection progresses, it can result in a life-threatening condition called pyelonephritis, which is actually an infection of the kidneys. And even it can be potentially life-threatening from the standpoint of older individuals. There's a suggestion that older individuals who suffer from chronic urinary infections are more likely to die, quite simply. I mean, it's one of the things where, you know, how do you predict whether a person is likely to survive for the next 5 years? Well, you look at a variety of things, their ability to walk a certain distance, their overall blood tests, if they are dramatically underweight, wasting away. But actually, one of the signs that someone is at risk is if they can't get rid of bacteria in their urine. And it may be asymptomatic, but still, nonetheless, that still is responsible for a higher risk of death. So here are some stats. It's estimated that annually several hundred million women suffer from urinary tract infections. The cost to healthcare providers amount to over $6 billion annually worldwide. And that could even be an underestimate because there are 3 billion females in the world. And if you estimate the incidence of urinary tract infection in women as about half an episode per person per year. In other words, there's a likelihood that every woman is going to have a half an infection per year. That means one infection every 2 years on average. And there's a recurrence rate of between 27 and 48%. So this is clearly a big source of trouble. Higher risk in pregnancy affects around 5% of women, and of those, a fairly high risk of infection of the kidneys, pyelonephritis. One-fifth of those, 20%, can develop kidney infections. Urinary tract infections, more common in women, and women are allowed to have one or two urinary tract infections before a major workup is undertaken to see if there's a structural problem with their plumbing. Then you go to a urologist to see if there's a reason that you keep getting these infections. That should be done because maybe there's some sort of problem with retention of urine, a structural problem that causes frequent infections. But, you know, very common that women get frequent infections. In men, usually just one urinary tract infection is reason for going to see a urologist to make sure that there's not something obstructing the urine flow or predisposing to infection. So how do you get a urinary tract infection? Well, actually, urine that is extracted and produced in the kidneys that travels down through the urinary tract. It travels through the ureters, which connect to the bladder. It should be sterile, and the bladder should actually be sterile, but sometimes it's not. The way that bacteria get into the urinary tract is usually via the urethra, and women are anatomically more prone to get urinary tract infections just because of the fact that there is a very close proximity between the urethral opening and the rectal area, which is where contamination of bacteria from fecal sources is quite adjacent to this portal of entry that can then cause the bacteria to ascend up the urinary tract, up the urethra, into the bladder, and create problems. Now, the bladder itself is protected. It's got certain immune properties, but these properties sometimes break down, and there are also various mechanical factors and chemical factors that may predispose to urinary tract infections. It's very common for women to experience what's called honeymoon cystitis, which is cystitis that occurs with simply the friction of sexual intercourse. It tends to push bacteria up the urethra, and then that invades the bladder. It's simply sort of an overuse syndrome that it may affect the urinary opening. Also, as I said, in pregnancy, there's a tendency for the urethra to be compressed and the bladder to be compressed, and that results in what's called urinary retention. Anytime you have urinary retention, whether you're a man or a woman, the urine just sits there. You don't empty your bladder completely. And there are studies which urologists perform called post-void residuals to see if you're retaining urine. In men, the main cause is enlarged prostates. In women, there may be other causes. In children, there's actually a condition called vesicoureteral reflux, VUR, which is kind of it's a valvular problem. It means that the urine doesn't get properly excreted, and there's some backflow, and that can cause problems, especially in young girls. Also, as women age, they tend to have more urinary tract problems, partially because the external genital area isn't enriched enough with estrogen. Estrogen helps keep the tissues healthy, and in menopause, sometimes that area literally becomes atrophied. Vaginal atrophy is sometimes associated with urethral atrophy and literally bladder shrinkage. So whether you get infections or not, as a woman postmenopausally, you may have more urinary frequency because your bladder is shrinking. Or alternatively, the defense at the urethral meatus, which is the opening to the outside, isn't as strong because you don't have adequate hormones and the tissue there is dry, desiccated, and irritated. So hormones may play a role also in the likelihood of urinary tract infections. And for women, one of the risk factors for urinary tract infections is simply that they don't pee enough. I'm being serious about that. Is there are so many barriers to comfortable public urination for women at events, Broadway shows, sporting events. There are often long lines. There is a dearth of toilets or insecure toilets or concerns about hygiene in toilets. So women often dehydrate themselves. And one of the ways in which you can prevent urinary tract infections is by rinsing the urinary tract with a flow of sterile urine. And in fact, that's actually one of the strategies that women who are prone to urinary tract infections should employ is hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. And it may seem like, oh my goodness, I'm peeing all the time. That's not good. But it's actually a way of preventing an infection because stagnant urine that stays in the bladder is more likely to get infected. So it's also strategy. Many women have heard about this, or they've been told by their GYNs that it's desirable, although it's not too romantic, to urinate before having sex and perhaps right after sex. That may eliminate some of the cuddle possibilities, but it's actually, from the standpoint of reducing susceptibility to UTIs, it's a pretty good strategy. The other thing that makes urine a very good culture medium for bacteria is a high level of sugar in the urine. And we can hearken back to the days of the Egyptians. The Egyptians actually recognized diabetes as an illness. There was diabetes, 3,000 and 4,000 years ago, and there are accounts of it in the Egyptian hieroglyphic writings. The condition was referred to as sugar urine or sugar urine. Now, how do they know that there was sugar in the urine? Well, they didn't have dipsticks in those days or chemical analysis. Part of the art of medicine in those days was to taste the urine. And urine indeed was sweet in people with this disease. And, honey attracts flies, or, sugar certainly does. And in the case of bacteria tend to find sugary urine a perfect culture media for their replication. So diabetics more prone to this problem. And short of diabetes, a high sugar diet might predispose to urinary tract infections as well. So this gives rise to certain strategies that we can use to prevent or treat urinary tract infections. And one of them, as I mentioned, is hydration. Make sure that you drink plenty of water, not sugary beverages. Also, avoid precipitants of urinary tract infections, high sugar diet, intercourse. Don't avoid it, but take proper precautions in terms of urinating before and after. Avoidance of harsh chemicals. Some of my patients report that they have urinary discomfort, and that may or may not be associated with urinary tract infection. Sometimes discomfort is not a sign of infection. There can be irritation of the urethra, or there can be irritation of the bladder, as in interstitial cystitis. That's an inflammatory condition of the bladder due to allergy or sensitivity. So one of the strategies that can be employed in women who have frequent urinary tract infections is find out what they're allergic to. Actually, eliminating certain foods may reduce the constant need to urinate. Chemicals. Chemicals that are taken in foods may have an irritative effect on the bladder wall or suppress the natural immune response. These are some of the things that need to be checked out. Some women report that when they swim in a chlorinated pool, they have problems when they use antibacterial soaps or soaps that have harsh chemicals in them, that it irritates the urethra, causes them to have urinary discomfort, and they have to use more natural, chemical-free methods of washing. Another thing that can be worked on in, just as in any other type of infection, you can work on supporting immunity. Say you're getting lots and lots and lots of colds, respiratory infections. Well, you take the things that support immunity, vitamin C and zinc and selenium, and certainly vitamin D. These may have immune-enhancing effects. They may help your body fend off infections. In some cases, we give patients an extract of colostrum called transfer factor, which actually helps the mucosal surfaces, the nasal passages, the vaginal membranes, and the urinary tract, mouth, and so on, the internal mucous membranes, better fend off the onslaught of bacteria. So an immune-enhancing strategy could be part of how we deal with urinary tract infections. There's some discussion of how manipulating urinary pH can help with bladder problems. So actually, it turns out it's easier to alkalinize the urine than to acidify it. And one of the ways to do that is with either sodium, potassium, or calcium citrate. Polycitric K is a potassium citrate product that's actually used for prevention of the most common type of kidney stones can be sometimes used as a strategy. But also calcium citrate, common over-the-counter supplement, can be used to alkalize the urine, which is sometimes helpful. Another strategy, and we'll talk about that more because there's a product that really seems to work for this, is to decrease adherence of bacteria to the bladder or the urethral surfaces. So for an infection to take hold, it's not just sufficient for some bacteria to be there. The bacteria can be there, but the surfaces of our body have protective coatings, a little like Teflon, sort of non-stick coatings. But the bacteria sometimes can breach that defense, and then they attach. And once they attach, then they have formed a colony, and sometimes a biofilm will develop, and that can be a source of chronic infection. So strategies by which we prevent the adherence of bacteria to the wall of the urethra or the wall of the bladder can be helpful at preventing recurrent urinary tract infections. And in part two, when we talk about specifics, we're going to give you a really great home remedy for prevention of UTIs and even treatment of mild UTIs based on the principle of decreasing adherence of the bacteria to the wall of your bladder. Also, you know, just as antibiotics work in the bladder, what happens is you take them by mouth and they get excreted by the kidney into your urine and they concentrate in your urine. And the presence of these antibiotics, you know, whether it's Cipro or whether it's Bactrim or, you know, there's a variety of antibiotics that are popular for urinary tract infections, they kill the bacteria. Unfortunately, what happens is you get bacterial resistance often. You know, you use them too often, and then the bacteria will go through a process of natural selection, and they will develop a way of evading the antibiotic that is being used. And then then you'll have to keep shopping along for stronger and stronger antibiotics until nothing is left that works. Or alternatively, after you've used a lot of antibiotics for your urinary tract, you develop a really serious problem like pneumonia, but you have become immune, in effect, to many antibiotics. So it's a really good reason to try and use natural products that we'll talk about in part two. So let's spend a moment distinguishing between dysuria, which is a sensation of needing to go to the bathroom a lot, versus an actual infection. Sometimes they're indistinguishable, but an infection may be characterized by the presence of blood or by smelly or odoriferous or cloudy urine that suggests the presence of white blood cells or pus in the urine. And when this is accompanied by fever or flank pain, boy, that's trouble. You know, it's a trouble sign. You really can't mess around with natural therapies at that point because you may need powerful antibiotics or even, in some instances, intravenous antibiotics. But let's say you're a woman who's suffering from urinary frequency. Well, there may be several reasons. One is simply behavioral and involves the nervous system because the bladder has stretch receptors. And the stress receptors in some women and men are much more sensitive to the presence of small amounts of urine, and that engenders a conscious desire to void or urinate. And this can sometimes be overcome simply by behavioral retraining. They've done some experiments where they've taken volunteers and they've given them wristwatches with alarms that ring every half an hour. And every half an hour, whether you have to urinate or not, under experimental circumstances, volunteers are told, go to the toilet and empty your bladder. And after doing that for, you know, just a short period of time, just 48 hours, what happens is they become much more sensitive to the presence of urine, which suggests a behavioral strategy to reverse that, which is to retrain your bladder to hold more urine, which can be done. It's actually sort of a bladder retraining process. Now, it's not a great idea to hold and hold and hold because past a certain point, you can actually cause your kidneys to swell up and be damaged. It's called hydronephrosis when urine backs up, and that's not good. But some people, you know, are maybe it's parental training or it's nervousness or worry about, you know, when's the next toilet opportunity going to come up, that they have trained their bladders to literally shrink or become more sensitive to small amounts of urine. And we can use behavioral methods to get them to go longer periods of time without peeing. Now, there's many medications that are used, and I don't want to go through the whole raft of medications. This is a big business, is medications that suppress the desire to urinate for both men, often with large prostates, and women who have, you know, one degree or another of causes of urinary frequency. By the way, another cause of urinary frequency is after childbirth, a lot of women have dropped bladders, or simply through aging, they have dropped bladders, and that may cause a tendency to want to urinate. And sometimes that can be fixed surgically by resuspending the bladder, and that can alleviate the problem. The short of mechanical problems like that, sometimes food allergy is a problem. And what we discovered is there's a condition in kids, bedwetting, is that some kids have a reduction in their frequency of bedwetting when we eliminate a food. In particular, some studies have shown that elimination of dairy can be helpful in the treatment of enuresis in kids. Actually, a powerful medicine is sometimes given that's called antidiuretic hormone, which prevents a diuresis or urine overproduction in some of these kids and sort of blocks their impulse to pee, but that's a powerful way of treating it. Coming back to these medications that are used to treat urinary frequency, I'm not that crazy about them because actually studies show that to a large degree, their efficacy is due to a placebo effect. There's not that much real efficacy to these medications. Also, they may cause side effects like dry mouth, constipation in elderly patients who are maybe a little bit on the verge of losing it from the standpoint of memory and at the cusp of dementia. They can put you over the edge into what is full-blown dementia because they're cholinergic medications that affect the brain. So these are not that desirable, and they're particularly used in an elderly population who may be more sensitive to their effects. So another thing that can be used to, you know, as a natural strategy is the elimination of oxalates. And then there are certain bladder irritants. And so in part two, we'll talk about the low oxalate diet. We'll talk about bladder irritants to avoid. We'll also talk about the role of estrogen. And then we'll talk about some natural supplements that are helpful for urinary discomfort or urinary tract infections. So part two coming up, we'll provide you with some news you can use, some solutions for urinary tract problems.